ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we continue reading from Srimad-Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 10, The Pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, Text 28. Kritaisha Vidavalanka Vayamcha Kulanandana Vayamcha Kulanandana Dehakritonam Gridranam Atma Narakahetave Translation and Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O pleasure of the Rakshasa dynasty, because of you, the state of Lanka, and also we ourselves now have no protector. By your deeds, you have made your body fit to be eaten by vultures, and your soul fit to go to hell. Purport. One who follows the path of Ravana is condemned in two ways. His body is fit to be eaten by dogs and vultures, and the soul goes to hell. As stated by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita 16:19, Tam aham divishata kruram samsareshu naradamam kshipam yasham ashubam asurit seva yonishu. Quote, those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, are cast by me into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. Unquote. Thus, the destination of godless atheists such as Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, and Dantavakra is a hellish condition of life. Mandodari, the wife of Ravana, could understand all this because she was a chaste woman. Although lamenting for the death of her husband, she knew what would happen to his body and soul. Although one cannot see directly with one's material eyes, one can see with the eyes of knowledge. Pashyanti Jnana Chakshusha. In Vedic history, there are many instances of how one becomes godless and is condemned by the laws of nature. So it is my great pleasure to be among all of you again after three long years. So thank you very much for giving me shelter and a welcome home, away from home. So nice to see this community ever expanding. Oops. And the numbers must have at least doubled in among the Brahmachari ashram. I don't know about the community outside, but it looks like the ashram has at least doubled. Is that true? Right? 3 years? Last 3 years? Is that true? Anybody can confirm that? Yes. Thank you. Hare Krishna. So anyway, it's my pleasure to be here, and thank you for your association, and your community is an inspiration all over the world. We ourselves, also in New York, we try to follow in your footsteps. And we will, we'll never catch up, but it will be our supreme honor to try. So, thank you. So here we have Mandodari speaking. Just amazing just to see how here we have this very extremely selfish person, Ravana, and but he has such close association with such a great soul, his own wife. So such a close association. And it's amazingly the way she speaks, like, you know, totally like a devotee, like a really advanced, enlightened soul, which does also, which is a whole other discussion, that shows her character and her greatness and tolerance to live in such an impossible situation, having a partner like that and still remain faithful without compromising. That's a whole other story. I like to focus on this purport and this opening sentence of Srila Prabhupada. He says, one who follows the path of Ravana is condemned in two ways. So I was thinking about this. So what is this path of Ravana for us today? Because, you know, Ravana was a very exceptional person. He, had extreme powers and super influential and everything. So what does it mean for us? And I'd like to ask you, maybe get some input from you. What does it mean for us nowadays to be on the path of Ravana? What could that possibly mean for us as devotees? Yes.
Selfish.
Mm-hmm, yeah, yeah, selfish, definitely, yeah. Being selfish, yeah. Sorry? Desiring to enjoy the Lord's property, yeah, wonderful. Yeah. Not wonderful, but correct. Any other thoughts on what it means for us? Just think, meditate on yourself. I mean, what does it mean for us? I mean, does it relate to us? It's just this, these other guys, these demons, that, you know, this Ravana, we can just put him up and make him into this Maha demon, and the bigger we make him, the further we remove ourselves from his qualities. Right? Yes. Not listen to good advice. Yeah. Yeah. Not listen to good advice. Yeah, definitely. It's a good one. Any other thoughts? What it means for you to be on the Yes, Prabhu? Lust and envy. Yeah. Yes. Being satisfied with what we have. Yeah. Not being able to be satisfied with what you have. Yeah. Not respecting devotees. Yes. So, yeah, so these, we all know these things. I mean, we all agree to this, and we all have these, you know, we can all relate to this. You know, we are proud, we are arrogant, we are selfish, lusty, you know, disturbed, all the wonderful qualities that the Bhagavatam describes, symptoms of Kali Yuga. So what I would like to point out that there is one number one maybe enemy or problem that includes all the other ones, all these other things that I have mentioned. And that is this one very deeply rooted quality of self-deception. Self-deception is very, very close to our heart, and which, because we know all these things, we're not supposed to do this, and we're supposed to be selfless and serve and be the servant of the servant and everything. But somehow or other, we can find these qualities or this lack of qualities that we just all described. It's very easy to find them in others and to see them in others and point them out, but it's very hard to look at them ourselves. So why is that so hard? Why is that so difficult? Because there is that mechanism. The ego has this very slick mechanism that kind of just doesn't allow us to see ourselves as we are. This is called self-deception. And from that, with that one quality, we're actually not really coming in touch with our anartas. We can't really see. We can certainly always see them in others. That is never a problem, usually in my case anyway. But to really see them in myself and remain really progressive spiritually and really work on my anartas is very it's very hard, because it's such a deeply rooted mechanism. It's like automatic that comes. And And because it is, it exposes something in us and might expose something which could potentially be devastating and destroy conceptions we have ourselves. And you know, living in a community, living in a society, then naturally, and especially once you've been around for some years, so then you have a certain position and you have a certain expectation and people look up to you. So it's even harder than to, you know, especially get glorified and appreciated and people bow down and touch your feet and offer you food and so many things. You know, especially when you come to India, you have to get used to these things. You know, it's but it can, you know, all these things has become a very nice drug and that kind of numb you to reality, to where we're really at. And that will keep us actually on that path of Ravana, of which for us devotees means not dealing or being oblivious to our own anarthas, our own personal homework. That because that's the one thing that doesn't allow us to really get absorbed, get a taste in the holy name, to appreciate Vaishnav Sangha. Mm-hmm. So this self-deception leads to a tremendous lack of self-knowledge, knowledge of ourselves. We have so much philosophy. We know we have such a very exalted path, but we also have to need to develop that habit of being, you know, stepping off the path of Ravana and getting on the path of Ram. Now, the path of Ram is what, you know, is actually honestly dealing, you know, with our anarthas. Because until then, if we don't do that, then spiritual life progress is very slow, and we might wonder, we might ask ourselves when we take inventory that we've chanted for so many years the holy name, we are associated and everything, but sometimes maybe still the taste is not for the holy name is not there. Maybe our appreciation for the Vaishnavas, our relationships are maybe not so deep yet as maybe as we wish they would. We might still feel lonely even though we're surrounded by so many people. Because we did not really seriously take to the process of anatta nivritti, and which, for example, starts with really trying to chant attentively. Chant attentively our, you know, the Maha Mantra. And then if we chant inattentively, then naturally, in one sense, we never really associate with Krishna. So if we don't associate with Krishna, then the purification doesn't take place. So, ergo, clearly, so that now we can have chanted for so many years, but still the taste is not there because we didn't really chant properly or we didn't associate properly. So all these things, all the five angas of devotional service, we did not really enter into them deeply because we thought ourselves or some other, our ego, our false ego wasn't allowing ourselves to really do our homework, to really do the work that we really need to do. And these are very confronting and very uncomfortable questions. And but that is really our business. You know, that is really our. This is what we're here for. We are here. We chose. We want to live this life of, to live a life of enlightenment. We enter this path of self-realization. And so this means it's a very steep road, rocky and steep, and a very narrow path. And it's a very lot of obstacles. This one analogy I heard, beautiful analogy, which applies, which was came from a monastic tradition, which so it applies to monks, but it applies the same way to community. It's any community of people who are dedicated, who have a common goal, who have a very, you know, very exalted spiritual worldview and want to live by those values in the material world. Naturally, this that same analogy holds is of you have this bag of rocks, and this, they're all, you know, with sharp edges, you know, unpolished rocks, and you all throw them together in the bag and, you know, shake them around, and they're bumping into each other and making a lot of noise, and you know it's a very very loud and noisy affair, and you know really hitting each other very heavily because they all got these sharp corners. But if you keep shaking them, after some time, they all become beautifully polished and round and smooth, and it becomes a beautiful harmonious sound. So that is the effect of living in in an ashram or in community. And the necessity also, because one rock itself can't polish itself, by alone can't polish itself, right? It's very difficult. So you need the other rocks, even though they might be not polished, but they help you for yourself to become polished yourself. So it's together, that association is so essential. And within that association, there needs to be a courage. We need courage to and continue on this path. It's because, as I said, to try to free yourself from the self-deception. When you look at a little bit on certain behavior patterns, while you certain things you do again and again, you just can't seem to stop yourself from doing them. Maybe with particular people or just in general, certain habits, you know that they're not conducive for sadhana, but still we can't stop them. So looking at these things is very unsettling. It's not a nice thing to do. It's quite devastating, actually. It's quite devastating. And we very so much stress the association of advanced devotees, and because they inspire us. But it also, this is also another way of where you can really see, where you can take inventory and see of your shortcomings when you associate with advanced devotees. Said, wow, that can also be devastating to somebody, or sobering in a certain way, right? To be in the association and see them, see how short you're falling. So either way, wherever you are, if you're just sincerely trying to apply yourself, this is going to be, it's going to be opposition there. So we need courage. Courage is very much necessary to continue on this path. The second thing that we need is focus. In other words, sometimes when we take that honest inventory and we are really taking our, really doing our homework nicely and becoming really self-aware, which actually, even though it is so confronting, but it's the most liberating thing to do. This is the most liberating meditation, to really finally understand what is that little prison that I've created for myself, and at least become aware of the bars, right? At least become aware of the bars. So then, and again, if we have to act out in certain ways, the way we deal with people, at least now, just the fact, because we're aware of it, it won't have such a devastating impact, and we might be able to not engage in those habits. But it's only through self-awareness. It's only we have to want to see that. And the key is not to get depressed, but just to tolerate and move on. To tolerate and to move on. To see, because the understanding that the success is that we became aware of that little prism that we have created for ourselves, that little buttons that somebody pushes and it has come automatically, something we have no control over. And that always hinders us to go deeper into relationships, deeper into the holy name, deeper into our sadhana. So we need courage, we need focus, we need to focus on these things. It's very much necessary. And whenever we get an opportunity, and whenever we get this a moment of clarity, we should relish that moment of clarity and really pray to Krishna that we can have these moments again and again, because these are the crossroads in our spiritual life where we actually make tremendous advancement, where we can leave old behaviors and unwanted things behind. We can actually work through some anattas. And then most importantly, is we need friendship. Because just like I gave the analogy with the rocks, you know, one rock alone can't polish itself. We need to create a trusting environment of people where we can expose our sharp corners and these things that are controlling us, that we have no control over, and the only thing we have, the only power we have, is to reveal it. Because this is how Krishna reveals the demoniac mentalities, the Ravana in us. In previous ages, Krishna would personally come and kill Ravana. That's not happening anymore. In the age of Kali, the demons incarnate in form of what? The uncontrolled mind, right? In our mind, which does not allow to look at ourselves, that demoniac mind. So by revealing that mind, then to a devotee, then Krishna, speaking through that devotee, kills the demon, you know, kills that demon of that uncontrolled mind, that thing, that dirty little secret that you're holding in yourself, which you think if somebody would know that, they would reject you, they would not like you anymore. Mm-hmm. So that is, you know, that is the third part, friendship. You only do that when you really feel safe. You know, when you really feel safe. So working on those relationships, which is very much stress also, this ashram and this community, is so essential for us to remain on the path of Ram and get off the path of Ravana. Because the path of Ravana leads us only to self-deception. Continued self-deception, and spiritual advancement is very slow. And you know there's only two directions, right? Either you go up in spiritual life or you go down. There's no coasting. There's no plateau. Either you go up or you go down. So if you're not progressive, you're degressing. So it's only two ways. So we want to take advantage of this beautiful, most wonderful process that we have, this wonderful sangha that we have, and create that environment where we can help each other to become polished, beautiful, polished rocks that make this beautiful sound, this beautiful kirtan for the pleasure of Radha Gopinath. But this is not easy. It is very confronting, very hard. I'm sorry. And it's not easy. It's not an easy path. It is not. Why it is not easy? Because, you know, there's so much resistance. There's one part of us that resists this extremely. There's a tremendous tension in us that resists this kind of focus and meditation. But the other side in us, our soul, is jubilant, like Bhakti Tirthamash gave that analogy of the two dogs in the heart, the good dog and the bad dog, you know. And so who wins the fight between these two dogs? The one whom you feed the most, right? So we want to feed the good dog. So we want to develop courage, focus, and friendship. You know, when we become focused on really taking this path of anatta nirvritti really serious, really very much seriously, you know, trying to uproot the ravana in our heart, then we need courage, because once you sharpen the lens, oh my God, you're going to see so many things, right? And therefore you need courage, and courage comes through friendship. We need to be encouraged. Otherwise nobody can make it. We all need encouragement. So, and then, you know, the doors to pure devotional service open fast, purely because Krishna is pleased, Radha Gopinath is pleased, seeing a group of people or individuals so sincerely, so honestly, so sincerely dedicated to this path of honestly trying to really just live a life of integrity. And then tremendous power comes and tremendous support comes. So these are some thoughts. Thank you very much for your attention. Let's see if there's any question. comment, or challenge? As sure as the sun rises in the morning, Ekalavya Prabhu has a question.
Hi, Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for your wonderful class, which is, I find, challenging to my conceptions of my own Krishna consciousness, and I feel hopeful that by meditating on these words, I can progress, we can progress in spiritual life. Thank you. My question is regarding the concept of disclosure. What is the need for disclosure? You were mentioning the analogy of the rocks. They have sharp edges. We have sharp edges. What is the role in disclosing our sharp edges to others in the community to polish it? And what is the dynamics of disclosure? How does it work and how can we practice it?
So what's the purpose of disclosure and what's the dynamic of disclosure? Yes. How does it work? So the purpose of disclosure is to get a grip on ourselves, to actually become real, to become free from that self-deceptive nature, which always keeps it. We are so close to the path, but it doesn't really allow us to really deeply enter. We're so close, but so far away, because bhakti is really an affair of the heart. From the deepest recesses of our heart, it's an offering of the heart, and that heart is now overtaken by unpleasant things, certain things that are just not only there's wonderful things there in there. But they just can't come out. They're obstructed. And they're locked in there. And because we, just because of this beautiful age we're living in, this very, you know what the age is like. You all grew up. And just a very, not very conducive, not a very gentle and enlightened era we're living in. Enlightened in the sense of self-awareness or self-realization. We're living in a very ignorant age. Very ignorant. So as ourselves, as spiritual beings, being raised in an age that is completely in denial, you can say, of spirituality, it's such a dichotomy. From the get-go, it's such a hopeless and such a tragic setup. So in one sense, we never really get to know ourselves. From the very beginning, it's very difficult to really get to know our true selves. So what do we do? All we can do is just adopt and identify with the material values and the values that's been given around us, and adopt those qualities. How you get around? How do you get through life? This is what people do. All these wonderful vices we acquire just to get through life, because that's what everybody else is doing. So, but then coming to spiritual life, we realize, oops, I invited all these friends in my heart. I thought they would help me, but now that they're actually my enemies. So, and it's, you just invited them, and you, in one sense, you on your own, it's just not possible. This is too powerful to really to become free from them. So the purpose of disclosure is to gain access to them and to kindly invite them out. Please leave. Mm-hmm. And that opportunity, that space is created when we take shelter of Krishna. When Krishna sees that this person really wants to come to me. And then what's the evidence of that? Is that we disclose it to Krishna's devotee. The devotee represents Krishna. And she says, Krishna, I really want to come to you. So, and so it's ultimately, it's only Krishna can do that. Krishna can invite those friends out. He can, get them out. So, and we do that by revealing it to somebody who represents Krishna for us. And the dynamics is how to do it. Well, I think the most important thing is, you know, there has to be, the trust has to be there. And there has to be a lot of trust has to be there too, where you feel safe. And also somebody who's Krishna consciousness you respect. Somebody maybe more advanced or maybe an equal. And that is sometimes a difficult person to find. The more advanced you become, in quote-unquote, in externally in society, the higher your position is, you know, the fewer people are there you can have among equals. So even then, it's even most important to also to have that check and balance system to remain progressive. So trust has to be there, and somebody who's Krishna consciousness you respect, whom you feel like this person is actually Krishna conscious and can really bring me, hearing from this person, associating with this person is uplifting me. And it's not just confusing me more, causing doubts. You know, intelligent questions and probing questions is good, but just causing doubts and despair is not conducive. So, does it answer your question?
Be patient with me. I'm very thick. Do I really need to reveal my anartas to other devotees, or can I not just try to see them myself and work on them? I'm afraid to reveal my anartas to others, what they will think of me.
Right. Yes, of course. That's the big. That's why you need courage. Courage is important because, in my experience, it is much easier. It's such a huge relief to be able to do that. Once you have a real heart-to-heart conversation, and we can really, just really reveal your mind completely with everything that's there, with also the things that you know that bother you, that you can't stop, but it's just kind of haunting you. Once I can actually do that, I feel tremendous freedom and liberation. And I've never experienced it on my own. Sometimes in prayer, prayer is also very powerful. Certainly, certain things can become released and free through prayer, and just sincere service and everything. Certain things just go away, but certain things you will see year after year that is not going away. So then we have to look for a different method, you know. Yes, Raghunath Prabhu.
Talking about the dynamics of this self-disclosure, on a rare occasion you will find that on the spur of the moment, a person may do self-disclosure, and then understanding the social implications,
yes,
he goes into a denial.
Yes.
That to me would be an infinitely more complex and difficult situation to come out of. And what do you do, and how do you deal with such a situation?
Yeah, so this has to, again, therefore the trust has to, you have to also feel that you can trust this person whom you're disclosing, and also that this person also as like a friend can then also, because maybe to that we're embarking on a journey back home, back to Godhead. So, and that means that we can also see each other completely. We can see both aspects, the good and the ugly, right? That's friendship, where you feel, well, I'm the other person. Nobody knows me better than this person, but still, he or she is still my best friend and still is supporting me and encouraging me. There's nothing more empowering and gratifying than that. So that's something that needs to be cultivated, that needs to be developed. When we disclose something, therefore, again, we want to carefully seek that person because we make ourselves vulnerable. But at the same time, we also want to understand that there's a tremendous opportunity. And ultimately, you know, in one sense, you can't lose. Okay, maybe you go in denial, you feel bad afterwards, what you revealed. But okay, But what's your recourse? Go back and deny completely? No, we have to go back. No, we have to. We want to move forward in spiritual life. We want to stay on the path of Ram. We really want to stay and really honestly dealing with our things. So then we have to maybe look for a different person. But we have to move forward. Not to mean progressive. We have to look forward. And we have to move forward in spiritual life. Because nothing is more painful than remaining stagnant and become numb. Although sometimes we're choosing that. We rather prefer us to be just a man. We don't want to deal with these certain things. But in our heart of hearts, our soul is crying when we make that decision. Our soul is experiencing so much pain. So, you know, we can pray. We should really very sincerely pray to Krishna, to our deities, that we can find that association where we can truly be ourselves. And if you pray for that, sincerely, Krishna will bring. And if what to speak of, there's a group of people that really know, they really create that safe holding space for each other. Powerful. Nothing will change the world more than with people of integrity. People of integrity and spiritual vision. What does integrity mean? I do as I say. That's hard. Very hard. So we need help. And we need to do it together. We can't do it alone. Is that okay? Yes. Just a microphone?
Hare Krishna. I was just thinking that when we see faults in others, it's kind of eventual that we all do it, and I know that I do it. So when it comes up, and I know the things that we see, the faults in others are usually what we see in ourselves as a reflection. So how do we take this experience and not condemn others for those actions and maybe certain things that we know are not proper and maybe even breaking vows or whatever it is, how do we not condemn but also not condone whatever that action is and not be like kind of, how do we accept but not blindly?
Right. The whole mentality of fault finding, in my experience, is proportionate to the degree that I'm blind to myself. The more I'm actually working on myself, and I'm successful with it. I'm making progress on working on myself, and becoming a little bit out of denial and self-deception, and really, really deal with my stuff. The more I do that, the more compassionate I become with everybody else, because I realize, oh my God, I got such a long way to go, and I hope people won't judge me, and there's hope for me. And then I'm much less inclined to judge others. So to the degree that we take our own homework serious, to that degree you won't be so disturbed, because usually when something really disturbs us, it means it triggers something in us, but this is that we don't want to see, so we just project it on the other. So then it means we're not very self-aware. If you're a little more aware, then we realize this, then I can ask myself, why am I so disturbed? Why is this? That's a higher step, and that maybe leads you a little to some self introspection, and then not condoning something that maybe shouldn't be condoned. Usually, if it's not your service to correct somebody, if you're responsible for somebody's spiritual life, then you need to do something, then you should do something. And if it's not your service, but you're still really concerned, then maybe you go to somebody who's connected to that person, whom that person respects, like an authority or something. Just say, hey, you know, I observed this in this person, and what do you, is there anything I should do? Or, you know, just want to let you know. Just want to just, is he aware of it, or is she aware of this? And or should I do something, or just inquire for somebody else? Because that's, you know, probably a safer way to do it. And in this way, also you do the responsible thing of not just being, you know, oblivious to somebody else's maybe problems. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki.